Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. This is Tuesday, December 24th, Christmas Eve, 2013, and this is Dr. Daniels. Our topic this evening is healthy supplement myths that could be harming your health. So what I'm going to talk about tonight, not just supplements so much, but myths in the area of natural healing that we hear over and over again, or I should say that I hear about, and how they're actually harming your health, and what I believe the truth to be. Disclaimer here, right? These are my personal opinions based on my experience and observations. This is not medical advice. Any action you choose to take based on what you hear tonight is absolutely, totally, completely, 100% your responsibility. And me or my representatives, whoever they might be, accept no responsibility. Okay, there is a disclaimer. So, what I wanted to talk about is, why don't we just start with the questions I've been getting? That's really good. So the first one is about MSM. So, Dr. Daniel, I've wondered about MSM. Is it really a helpful food supplement and good sulfur that we need? All right. The body needs sulfur, no doubt about it. And there are many, many, many ways to get sulfur. You can soak in sulfur springs, and those have been reported to eradicate arthritis. I actually did do that myself a few times. Unfortunately, I didn't have arthritis, so I couldn't report on that particular benefit. But that's one way. Some even advocate taking a pinch of sulfur powder orally. MSM, which is a methionine sulfate compound, is one way to get sulfur. My favorite is N-acetylcysteine. That's N as in Nancy, acetyl, A-C-E-T-Y-L, cysteine, C-Y-S-T-E-I-N-E. Now, for those of you who are not that good at spelling, it's capital N, capital A, capital C. So what does MSM do? Well, MSM, the best I can figure out, is a mild to moderate anti-parasitic agent. In other words, it helps the body deal with parasites. But it's kind of in the medium strength category. That's one. And number two, as you push the dose higher and higher and higher to get increased benefits, you can get side effects from it. In other words, you can get side effects before you get your desired effect. So I lean more towards N-acetylcysteine, which supplies quite a bit of sulfur, but has the added effect of cleaning the liver and increasing your body's production of glutamine, a major detoxing substance. And it also helps the brain as well. So that's Does abiding sulfur? Yes. Is it in the form of MSM? Probably not. So that's one. Now, my pet peeve is superfoods. There's a new one every day. But one example is spirulina. Another example is maca powder. But what all these superfoods have in common is they're dehydrated and they're powdered. And the myth, as I see it, is that these superfoods can transform your health beyond what regular foods can do. Now, there's a hazard here, and we'll just take spirulina as an example. Spirulina is basically a source of chlorophyll. It's a single-celled algae, which is dehydrated and, you know, ground up and pulverized. Now, you can get a ground up pulverized form of chlorophyll by taking a leaf of kale, spinach, or collard greens and putting it in your Vitamix blender or some other high-powered blender. What's the advantage of that over, say, spirulina? First of all, it has not been dehydrated. Once you dehydrate something to a powder, the amount of water taken out of it is just phenomenal. And then when that powder enters your body, this, even though it's a superfood powder, it is what they call water hungry. It's a big fast word for that, hydrophilic or hydroscopic. But it becomes water hungry, and it sucks the water out of your intestines, sucks the water from your circulation, and becomes dehydrating. This is not a good idea. So any superfood that you're contemplating, what you want to do is take a look at, okay, what is the natural raw food that I can get that's the equivalent? So if it's a dehydrated fruit or berry, what's a berry that grows in your area that you can obtain for free and put, not free, but obtain fresh and put into your blender? Actually, you may obtain it for free if you just go ahead and pick it yourself. I definitely recommend that. There is no better food than wild harvested food that grows near your home. What does that mean, wild harvested? That means you went out and just plucked it off the tree yourself, and a tree that hopefully is what we call a volunteer tree. It's a tree that grew all by itself. So superfoods, which are basically foods usually cultivated using some mysterious product in some faraway land, some mysterious process, rather, in a faraway land, are actually not any healthier and actually less healthy than fresh foods that you obtain locally and put through a blender. Okay, the next question is cacao. That's interesting. Cacao is a bean from, of course, a cacao plant, and this is the basis of chocolate and many caffeinated drinks. Now, cacao powder has an incredible caffeine effect. Obviously, it contains a lot of caffeine. This can give you a caffeine buzz and energy, but also can give you the same adrenal fatigue that you get, say, with coffee. So I would say just stick with your glass of coffee if you need a buzz. And it's easier to just measure your coffee as to how much coffee you're drinking and adjust it up and down. I don't see that it would be really any healthier than coffee. But this myth of cacao being extremely healthy leads people to consume enough of it to harm themselves and then ignore the warning signs of harm, warning signs being weakness, fatigue, mood swings. So that's the cacao power food one. This next one is a question that's emailed in. Could you ask Dr. Daniels if chromium is good for diabetics and tips on weight loss? I am rapidly gaining weight for no apparent reason, and my doctors don't have any answers. Okay. Now, there's a lot of questions in here. There's a lot of myths in here. The first myth is that chromium as a separate supplement is good for diabetics. It turns out that the cause of diabetes is malnutrition, specifically lack of minerals. Chromium is a mineral. Now, chromium is actually contained in a mineral-high food called blackstrap molasses. So if you eat blackstrap molasses, you're actually getting chromium, vanadium, another mineral which is good for diabetes, and a whole spectrum of trace minerals missing in diabetics, why would molasses have all the minerals that are missing in a diabetic? Well, diabetes is often characterized by eating refined sugars. What are refined sugars? Refined sugars are basically the juice of the cane plant, which is squeezed out of the cane plant, leaving the fiber behind. And then the liquid, which is actually still pretty nutritious, is then heated and boiled to evaporate the water, leaving behind two fractions. One, the white sugar fraction, and two, the mineral and B vitamin fraction, which is blackstrap molasses. So blackstrap molasses is actually, strictly speaking, the remedy for diabetes because it replaces all the nutrients that are missing, which of course led to the diabetic state in the first place. So, is chromium good for diabetes? Yes. Is a supplement good for diabetes? Probably not, because in order to get diabetic, you're missing a whole lot of supplements. Missing just one supplement is not going to give you diabetes. And missing one mineral. So, the approach of buying separate, isolated minerals, just take the blackstrap molasses. It's the one that's less than 50 calories per tablespoon. That means the sugar content is low, the mineral content is high, and it actually lowers blood sugar. Very exciting. Next piece of the question is, I'm rapidly gaining weight for no apparent reason. Now, this person is diabetic and seeing a doctor, which means or suggests he might be taking medications for diabetes. All medications for diabetes cause weight gain. How is that? They basically magnify the effect of existing insulin or, in the case of insulin, they add insulin itself. Insulin is the numero uno growth hormone. It causes weight gain. It causes growth. So this person needs a particular direction. In terms of their dieting, their therapies in a coordinated manner so that they can lose weight. As a diabetic, it's very difficult to lose weight while you're taking diabetic therapies from your doctor. I know because, well, I'm a doctor, and I used to, in my unenlightened days, prescribe this stuff, but nowadays, no more. So what this person should do is they should send an email to support@vitalitycapsules.com with discovery session in the subject line. And then Gabriel sent in an application for discovery session. This is the first step to seeing if it might be reasonable for them to access one-on-one with Dr. Daniels. That would be me. So this person needs definitely individualized guidance, and getting one mineral at a time is not reasonable. Get the whole spectrum, and that can be found in a natural substance, even more natural than a pill, and that would be blackstrap molasses. A third thing this person said in this very complex question is weight gain, weight loss. This person feels that if they lose weight, they're going to be healthy. And so it's very important to confuse weight loss and health. This is important. It turns out there's actually an inverse association between obesity and, well, this is a shocker, isn't it? Let me put that in English. Let me break that down. People who are obese have a lower death rate than people who are not obese. So if living longer is what you want to do, and you're living in the United States, then you don't want to get too worried about obesity. Let's go over the numbers that substantiate this and explain this. Then I'm going to go through the rationale as to why this is the case. And why is it that this natural myth, which is that normal weight, according to the height weight charts, is a healthy weight? Okay, so that is a myth. It is a myth that normal weight, according to height weight charts, is a healthy weight. This is if you're in the United States. I can't speak for other countries because I don't have all of their statistics. But I do have the stats for the United States, so I can talk about that. Okay. First, CDC report, August 2013. That's pretty recent. That's only 4 months ago. More than one-third of United States adults, that's 35.7%, that's a lot, are obese. All right? Get that in your head. 35.7% of all United States adults are obese. So now we're not going to worry about the definition of obesity, but we'll just say it's, well, fat. Now, then we have another site on the Internet, the Mercola site, which says that 1 in 5 deaths, that's 20% of deaths, are associated with obesity. So if 35.7% of individuals are obese and only 20% of those dropping dead are obese, then the least you could conclude is that being obese is not an increased risk factor for death. It just is not, cannot possibly be. The next thing you can conclude, if you're into drawing serious conclusions, you can reach a little further. You can say that being obese may be associated with living longer. And actually, it is. It turns out that there is this distinguished subset of the United States population, and these people are obese. They have more, a higher percentage of them are obese than in the regular U.S. population. They do not go to school. They're not as educated. They also do not have access to health care. And, of course, they are, well, poor. Yet, on average, they live 7 years longer and healthier than the average American. Who are these people? These are Hispanic immigrants. Now, this information is 2011, 2 years old. So what's happening as we speak, there's been kind of update studies on this incredible population, is that Hispanics in the United States are now beginning to experience lower birth rates and beginning to get health outcomes slash consequences similar to the general population. It's not a big shift, but it's a very small shift. So there's absolutely no evidence, epidemiological or study-wise, that obesity contributes to premature death. It just does not appear to be the case. There's no evidence there. Now, what might be the problem? What might be the reason why being overweight could be a protective event in terms of your health? Well, obesity is basically caused by chemicals and toxins. So chemicals such as refined food, artificial color, artificial flavor, artificial sweetener, all of these things are chemicals. Another chemical is the stuff they're spraying in the sky, the chemtrails, those are chemicals that you're inhaling. Another source of chemicals is the water that you drink. If you're drinking municipal water, you're not filtering your water. There's a lot of chemicals coming in there. So there's a tremendous amount of poisoning and chemicals that the average U.S. adult is encountering. Your body's defense for this is to produce more fat cells and sequester these toxins in layers of fat. And this protects your vital organs and helps you live longer. So simply losing fat, losing weight, may not be the most beneficial thing for your health. And so that is very, very important. And we see here that, again, 35.7% of Americans are obese, yet only 1 in 5 American deaths are associated with obesity. So this is a substantial benefit. At least 37% less likely to die if you're obese. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695, and I will take questions at the end of the program. Okay, vitamin C, this is a doozy. All right, now, if you've got half an ear towards what's going on with natural healing, you have heard that there's this person named Linus Pauling, Dr. Linus Pauling, a Nobel Prize winner, who feels that vitamin C, ultra-high doses, that's 5 grams to 45 grams, is extremely, extremely helpful and can do amazing things. Now, Dr. Linus Pauling lived well after age 90. Depending on what source you check, you know, there's variations of what his age was when he died, but he was definitely over 90. So I listen to people like that who live, who get great results from their own philosophies. Now, Dr. Pauling promoted something called ascorbic acid, which is a form of vitamin C that's basically can be manufactured in the lab. But any way you can get it, vitamin C, ascorbic acid is what he recommended. And so we have many studies from that era with vitamin C showing all the wonderful things it does in terms of accelerating healing, getting rid of colds, getting rid of arthritis, building muscle, building bone, sharpening one's brain, all kinds of wonderful things. Okay, so here we are, fast forward 2013, and what are we hearing? Vitamin C is bad for you, bad, bad, bad for you. And you need to get a special vitamin C. Maybe it's ester C, maybe it's rutin, maybe it's rose hips, maybe it's who knows what the latest thing is. And that vitamin C is made with ascorbic acid, and it's awful, 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 and you should never take it. This is some serious bad advice. I happen to agree with Dr. Linus Pauling. Vitamin C is absolutely phenomenal. In working with vitamin C, I found the minimum effective dose is 3 grams. If you're taking less than 3 grams a day of vitamin C, what's 3 grams? 3 grams is 3,000 milligrams. So 3 grams is the same as 3,000 milligrams. So if you're taking less than 3,000 milligrams a day of vitamin C, it's a possibility, a good possibility, that may not be contributing substantially to your health. All right, so that's 3,000 grams. So what's the highest dose you should take? The highest dose you should take is whatever dose of vitamin C causes you to get diarrhea. Once you reach that dose, back up just a little bit, and that dose is your daily dose of vitamin C, which is just phenomenal. What about the contention that that vitamin C is made with genetically modified corn or whatever? Vitamin C is simply ascorbic acid, and so the vitamin C itself has a unique sequence which is fixed. And so if that sequence is altered, then the substance is no longer vitamin C and therefore would not be sold as ascorbic acid because it would not be ascorbic acid. So if it is ascorbic acid, then the sequence of molecules in the ascorbic acid is unaltered. So don't worry, it's okay. Okay, here's another one. This one is very heartbreaking. The myth. Whole food vitamins are better / superior to isolated vitamins. This is unfortunately not the case. Whole food vitamins, to my consciousness, hit the scene around 1999. That's when I became aware of them. They may have been around before then, but 1999 is when I became aware of them. I said, oh my God, this is wonderful. Whole food vitamins. The vitamins are in the whole context of the food, enveloped with helper minerals and helper thises and helper thats. And so a lower dose surely will be just as effective, maybe even more so. I can't tell you how ecstatic. Of course, the price tag was 2 or 3 times that of the other vitamins, but I said, well, the heck, I guess you pay more for quality. But I followed this trend and worked with many people and found that people taking whole food vitamins actually did not seem to be doing better. And I was really puzzled by this. And so I decided to dig deeper. And in particular interest to me was the B vitamins, because you can cure a lot of misery with B vitamins. And my standard recommendation is B-complex, 52 a day. That's standard, standard, standard. It can vary depending on the person, the condition, but that's standard. And so I had a client who was taking top shelf B vitamins from whole food sources. And she was not doing very well at all. So I said, tell you, must be something wrong. Must be something going on with this. So I got on the internet and I went to the site and I looked into all the ingredients. And the ingredients at first glance seemed okay. But then there's this super, super small print. I mean, 6-point type. For those of you who are familiar with type, regular type is 12-point type. And headlines or big labels are in like 30 type. And so this was in 6-point type. I mean, I had to bend my head very close to my computer screen to sort this out. So what did it say? Each one of the B vitamins came from Saccharomyces cerevisiae, which was, of course, in the bottle. These are whole food vitamins. I thought, oh, and Saccharomyces is a mold. And, of course, the person had candida yeast problems. Well, there you go. So this person was getting their mold right there in their vitamins. I said, holy cow. So whole food vitamins are not always better than the isolated vitamins. So So you have to pay attention to that. You have to be aware. You have to know what you're looking for, why you're looking for it, and what you need. There are some cases, for example, if you want to get iron, the whole food iron supplement is absolutely superior. It's simply basically beet powder, and the iron is in the beet powder. It's very well absorbed, very well tolerated. People get wonderful results from it. But the whole food beet complex is another story. So that's important to get that. Also, when you use B vitamins are very powerful, by the way, they can be used to minimize withdrawal and drug addiction. And in those cases, fairly high doses are needed. They're effective and they're useful. So in those cases, obviously, you'd need the other refined B vitamins that are separated from the mold. Okay, so that's another myth. Now, I'd like to say for those of you listening, every now and then there are problems with the quality of the show. This week, I've taken exceptional care. I've called in the engineers from my internet company. I've demanded that they go over every last piece of equipment here in the house, and they replaced several pieces. It has been functioning better, so I hope that you guys have good quality tonight. But if you don't, I have an alternate recording, which is of exceptional quality, guaranteed. So one way or another, you will have an outstanding recording of tonight's program. Okay, what's the next myth? There's a lot of them. The next myth is that natural bioidentical hormones are better than synthetic hormones. I like this one. I really like this myth because this myth typifies the profound deception that many people are laboring under. Okay, so natural bioidentical hormones are better than synthetic hormones. This myth represents the situation that hormones have anything at all to do with hot flashes. So since hormones don't have anything to do with hot flashes, whether natural bioidentical hormones are equivalent to or superior to synthetic hormones is actually irrelevant because the cause of hot flashes is not hormones. This is really a profound piece of deception. So what do you do if you have hot flashes? Well, if you have hot flashes, first of all, what causes them? Causes hot flashes is once a woman goes through menopause, she no longer bleeds every month. Since she no longer bleeds every month, she's no longer dumping all of the chemicals and parasites and toxins from her system that she would have been dumping had she had her period. So when a woman stops her period, these toxins accumulate. And when a woman has a hot flash, what's happening is she's having a flash of perspiration. The body's attempting to quickly detox these chemicals that it would have gotten rid of at that special time of the month. So what's the answer if you're having hot flashes? The answer is to stop eating the foods that promote this toxicity. So the toxicity is a combination of things, one, parasites, and two, chemicals. And so eating sugar, for example, feeds the parasites. You get more of them. Your body's going to flash more and try and dispose of them through the skin. Similar with dairy products and meat products and preserved packaged foods. So that's the prevention side, but the problem is, of course, you already have hot flashes. And so then you need to go on the detox, which is to do enemas or have more frequent bowel movements, clean out the liver, drink more water, and these things actually make the hot flashes go away. And for personalized instruction, of course, you can send an email to support@vitalitycapsules.com with discovery session in the subject line. Next myth, natural healing. This one is another one that's a heartbreaking myth. It's necessary to get lab tests or x-rays to monitor progress, as in cholesterol tests or other tests. This is really unfortunate because the way natural healing works is natural healing, I mean, the basic principle is that it helps your body heal. It turns out that taking x-rays, shooting your body with x-rays, even if only to look at and monitor so-called progress, actually damages the body's healing and the body's immune system. So that's one thing. So these tests, visualization tests, are actually damaging. Next, the results of x-rays and tests often lag up to 6 weeks behind the body's healing. So in other words, you can have a body that's healing, improving, getting better, yet the x-rays don't show it for up to as much as 6 weeks. Same with blood tests. So getting these tests, one, is harmful, and two, the results are not reflective. And then there's a third thing that is a hazard of getting these tests, and that is how you feel is actually the best indicator of your health. What has happened is people, and now natural healers are going along with this, are subordinating objective findings of health to an external test or indicator. And this is absolutely wrong. Because what you're really talking about is how you feel and your ability to carry on with your life, your everyday activities, and things that you enjoy doing. So if you find that you're able to run up the stairs easier without getting short of breath, if you find that your pain is less, if you find that you're stronger, that you're happy, that your mind is sharper, then there is no need for a test. There is no better test than your feeling good. One of my friends says, nothing beats feeling good. And this is the danger, the total danger of this myth that it's necessary to get lab tests or x-rays to monitor the progress of any particular disease. Now, one more problem with this is many tests are nothing more than random number generators. What do I mean? It turns out if you take 100 people walking down the street and you do an MRI scan of their backs, you're going to find a substantial number, somewhere between 10 and 30%, actually have a bulging disc. These are 100 healthy people with no pain. And so when you have back pain and they do an x-ray and they see a bulging disc, they attribute the back pain to the bulging disc, when actually that's not the case. Because randomly, there are many people who have bulging discs, and it's not clear that having a bulging disc is a bigger risk of pain than not having a bulging disc, or that fixing the disc is going to relieve the pain. And so many tests, and this is an x-ray test, right? Hardcore findings, you know, objective, hey, there it is, it's a disc, it bulges. But, well, that's the objective finding. The reality is that this objective finding may have nothing to do with the person's symptoms, illness, or disease. And for this reason, monitoring and repeating tests is actually misguided. Okay, so save your questions till the end. We've got question time coming up in about 15 minutes here. Next is magnesium. Oh, let's talk about biofilms. Next is biofilms. Biofilms are bad. So what is a biofilm? All right. I've been getting emails and calls about biofilms, so we have to talk about this. So biofilm is actually a fat-rich membrane that microorganisms grow on. And these microorganisms grow on these fat-rich membranes all over the body. That's what a biofilm is. And so quickly your mind will say, oh, my God, biofilms, they are awful. Okay, but get this. These biofilms are necessary to the existence of good bacteria as well as undesirable bacteria. So therefore, a healing strategy based on eliminating biofilms may not deliver health and probably will not deliver health. So biofilms, yes, they exist. Are they bad? It's like saying a chair is bad. It depends on who's sitting in the chair. But to eliminate all chairs because some bad people sit in chairs is not a good strategy. And so this is another myth circulating around about biofilms. I would say this is not a useful strategy or way of thinking about things. To the extent that you do have biofilms in your body and you perceive that bad bacteria are inhabiting these biofilms, you need to look at it a different way, that these bad bacteria are in these biofilms and not in your vital organs. So biofilms, bad, not necessarily, no evidence to that right now. And most bacteria in your body are actually very good bacteria. There's a few trillion of them. And so we don't want to destroy their habitat either. Related to this is magnesium stearate. So another thing going around the internet and in natural healing circles is magnesium stearate is bad. Now, magnesium stearate is a flow agent. It's two stearic acids molecules bound together by magnesium, a magnesium molecule. We know definitely magnesium is desirable. But it's a flow agent. What's the significance of this? It's added to supplements to get them to flow easily through machines so they can be manufactured at a faster rate. And so if you're a company and you're manufacturing your nutrients at a very slow rate using, let's just say, different technology, older technology, then what you're going to do is you're going to put out articles saying that magnesium stearate is bad, and that way your competitors who might use magnesium stearate in their supplements will lose business and people will go to you. This is a marketing tactic. That's my read on it. But let's take a closer look at stearic acid. There have been some studies, clinical and epidemiologic. Epidemiologic means you look at populations. I personally like those studies better. Stearic acid was associated with lowered LDL, that's the bad cholesterol, in comparison with other saturated fatty acids. Stearic acid is also a main ingredient in coconut oil. Get that. And there appears to be no effect on bioavailability of supplements. So even though supplements that have stearic acid are absorbed more slowly, the total bioavailability does not appear to be affected. So put this in English, it means it may take you 15 minutes instead of 20 minutes to absorb your nutrients from that particular supplement that has stearic acid, but you will get them. Also, there is a dose of stearic acid that is deemed to be to cause side effects. And that dose is 170 grams per day of refined stearic acid. That's a lot of stearic acid. In order to get 170 grams per day of stearic acid, you need to be taking well over a kilogram of supplements. And most people don't take a kilogram of supplements. That's a lot of supplements. Next, cocoa butter has a lot of stearic acid in it. And so you need to realize that stearic acid or stearates are all around us and are actually quite safe. Having said that, Vitality capsules have stearic acid in them. Now, I will say when I was formulating Vitality capsules, the manufacturers offered me a list of 10 additives they thought I should put in the Vitality capsules. I said, are you kidding? And so we chopped the list down to stearic acid and silica for lubricants. Now, well, you know, I'm having a sale, a 50% off sale on Vitality capsules. It's a 3-day sale, and it's going to be starting in about a week. You'll be getting information on that in your emails. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-0695. And I'll take your questions at the end of the program. Okay, sweet drinks are dangerous and cause obesity, and therefore the government needs to tax these items. This is outrageous. So taxation and eliminating sweet drinks from schools and other venues may have a beneficial effect on health. This is totally, totally misguided. We have an example with our government. A really good example is the FDA. That's called the Food and Drug Administration. And the Food and Drug Administration now derives more than half of its income from the individuals, the corporations that it is supposed to regulate. So it's supposed to protect the public from possibly dangerous drugs being manufactured by drug companies. Yet these drug companies are a revenue source, a major revenue source for the FDA. What we've seen then is the FDA slash government, you know, the FDA is a branch of the government, has become complicit with creating deadly drugs and putting deadly drugs on the pharmacy shelves. Not only that, but even concealing the fact that they are deadly. And so if we create a taxation called a sin tax on sweet drinks, then we create a partnership between the government who receives the taxes and the corporations that are producing this dangerous substance. So a sin tax is absolutely not a way to handle any particular hazard. A way to handle it might be to educate the public, which would be the victims. But once you have the government collecting a tax from these things, and the government actually becomes a partner with the industry that's producing the poisons, and you see these industries actually do not get eliminated. So taxing a vice does not work. We can see that alcohol, for example, has been taxed. And with the taxation of alcohol, a lot of governments, state, local, have become very dependent upon these taxes. And their attitude towards things like drunk driving and other crimes involving alcohol have been extremely, extremely lenient. One example of this is the alcohol level intoxication for the United States is twice that of Europe. So we actually allow a person to drive with twice as much alcohol in their blood before we say, oh, they're intoxicated, than, say, in Europe. And so I'm sure the alcohol taxes have something to do with this. So you don't want the government getting involved with making a profit from things that are deadly to your health. Very, very, very bad idea. Okay, here's another one. And this one causes a lot of, I think, angst. You should get 8 hours of sleep every night, and too much sleep is dangerous and can shorten your life. I have to really scratch my head on this, but actually I'm too young to have my life shortened by too much sleep. But at any rate, it turns out that sleep is more complicated than that. There's two pieces of sleep. One is hours before midnight, which we'll say is between 6 p.m. and midnight, and hours after midnight, which we'll say is between midnight and noon the next day. Okay? It turns out every hour of sleep that you get before midnight is worth 2 hours of sleep after midnight. So if you want to get 8 hours of sleep, you can actually sleep from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. because the hours from 10 to midnight, that's 2 hours, count double, that's 4 hours. So it's 4 hours essentially you get before midnight and after midnight. What else do you need to know? So you can adjust that. And the ideal thing, I think, if your schedule slash lifestyle affords it, is bed by 8 p.m. up between 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. That is the sweet spot. Why is that? Well, it turns out that between midnight and 3 a.m., a lot of healing goes on. And this is why people who work the midnight shift, 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift, have worse health and a much shorter life expectancy than people who work the day shift, 7 to 3, or the evening shift, or the afternoon shift, 3 to 11. So sleep is very important, but the most important sleep is between midnight and 3 a.m. That is the most important sleep. So, no, sleeping longer hours does not shorten your life. What does shorten your life is going to bed after midnight. Even if you sleep until noon the next day, you still haven't made up for those lost hours of sleep. So the life-shortening thing is missing those hours of sleep between midnight and 4 a.m. When you miss those hours of sleep, that's when you're shortening your life because your immune system does not have the time it needs to make repairs. So the actual number of hours you get to sleep is really irrelevant. I would say as long as you are feeling good when you wake up, that's pretty much the acid test. Another myth is do not drink water with your meals. You should drink your water 1 hour before your meals or 1 hour after meals. This is seriously dangerous information. Why is this so dangerous? This is a myth, too, by the way. Why? Because the leading cause of disease in the United States, probably any place else for that matter, is dehydration, lack of water. And so by telling a person, well, first of all, to eat three meals a day, another myth, and then to not eat for an hour before or an hour after, or drink before an hour before or an hour after, ostensibly because of digestive enzymes that might be diluted, you have told this person that 9 hours, nine of their waking hours, they're not allowed to drink. And if you can't drink for 9 hours out the day, your chances of getting enough water are really diminished. And so this person who follows this advice is actually going to get deeper and deeper into dehydration. So what do I think you should do with water? I think you should drink water. Drink water. In fact, drink it with your meals. Drink it between your bites of food. This does two things. One, it provides some lubrication so that the stuff can be digested. But even more importantly, when your food does get down to your stomach, it creates a situation where your body does not have waterization cause it to be thickened and causing a post-meal severe tiredness. Your body has to reroute all this into the belly in order to have digestion. So if you will find that if you increase your water and drink water with your meals, that your post-meal tiredness or slump will go away. So do not drink water with your meals. Definitely not good advice. If this was true, soups would be poisonous. So this doesn't even make sense. As they say in the hood, that don't even sound right. Everybody knows soup is healthy, so how can drinking water with your meals be unhealthy? Answer is, it's not. It's very healthy. Drink water with your meals, please. Okay, we have a couple of questions. We have about 10 minutes left. I'd like to mention next week's show, though, briefly. Next is, if murder were, would you do it? And this is talk about the FDA and murder for hire. So lately there's been a lot of talk about the FDA as a criminal enterprise, and I'd like to paint another picture. The FDA is actually totally within the law when it approves dangerous, ineffective drugs, and I'm going to examine, in particular, the Orphan Drug Act and the special fast-track criteria and approval programs created by law permit these dangerous practices. So it might be murder, but it's certainly legal. So tune in next week and learn the backstory behind the legal FDA process that makes your health care so deadly. So, and I always write jokes, so let's take these questions and then I'm going to read you my jokes. Okay, let me push this button and see how this works out. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes. Hi.
Hi. My name's
Gerald.
Can hear you. Hi, my name's Gerald Kahn. Nice to meet you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry? Okay.
My pleasure, too.
Okay. Great. Thank you. I didn't know how else to contact you, but I've had some chronic pain problems, and I don't know if I have enough time to whatever say what I have to say, but I needed to get some help with that, and I tried to email
Did you email Gabriel?
I don't know. I emailed someone. I don't really understood what was going on, so I listened. I called in because I just thought that was the best chance I could talk to. So, anyway, I have
okay. It's Gerald, and so let me go back through those emails and see if I can find your email. Then I'll send you that application for a discovery session thing.
Okay.
And then you'll be able to show out all your details, and I can take a look at it.
Yeah, because it just, I anyway, I, like, it just seemed I got an automated voice, so.
Oh, okay. I'll go back and check with that then. I tried to ask Michelle. So thank you for letting me know about that. Okay. Hi, Dr. Danos, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm one of those people that I'll give you a little brief description of what I've been experiencing and suffering with. I grew up with PCOS. I'm now 53. I had a hysterectomy 11 years ago. I'm currently not on any type of allopathic prescribed drugs or prescriptions. I'm obese. I have very great difficulty losing weight. I'm now losing hair, and very upset about that and worried because I like to swim, and I don't like to wear the idea of having to possibly wear wigs or something like that. I've tried so many different things. I've spent thousands of dollars chasing supplements and natural things that I could do, and I just feel like at a loss. So I was wondering if maybe you could give me some guidance.
There's a lot of things that could be causing your problem. Did you have your ovaries out when you had your surgery?
I only have one ovary left, and it's limping along. I don't know if it's of any help at this point, but, everything else was plucked out.
All right. Okay. I'll answer your question. I'll take you off the air, then I'll answer your question. Okay. Thank you for calling. All right. So if a person – first of all, PCOS is an acronym for polycystic ovary disease, for those of you in the audience who haven't heard of that. And it is characterized by people being overweight, having irregular periods, having abdominal pain, and just really generalized misery. And if you're really unlucky as a woman, you could even grow a beard. It's very miserable. So the question then is, what can be done? This person's already had the uterus removed and one ovary removed. There is one ovary remaining. Good news is, one ovary is just as good as two, so that's really good news. Now, the bad news, though, is there's been a progression of hair loss. There are a lot of things that can cause hair loss these days. If you're on the West Coast, you know, it could be a Fukushima fallout situation, and that can be the case from the West Coast quite a bit inward. It could be an issue with the hair follicles, in which case something like small willow flower would take care of it. It could be an issue with your overall liver function. So it's really a lot of things it could be. But what I found is that it can be remedied. Also, it could be thyroid problems. There's a whole list of things it could be, and they should all be looked into. So this person should do is send an email to Gabriel at vitalitycapsules.com. So it's support@vitalitycapsules.com. Subject line is discovery session. But there are many things it could be, and most things that it can be actually can be improved. So that's the good news. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hello.
This is Mary.
Hi.
I would ask about me, but I have a more pressing problem. Do you know, is there anything, a good friend just told me that her friend's daughter tried to commit suicide. Is there stuff that they're spraying, or is it likely something that people are eating with the food they're eating, right?
Yeah, actually there's an epidemic of that, of suicide. And the epidemic of suicide is caused by antibiotics. So I'm guessing this is the daughter of a friend. The daughter might be maybe 20s or 30s, a young person.
Right. I don't even know her age. Somewhere around there.
Okay, but a young person.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that could be playing into it, but a lot of young people eat a lot of processed foods, and that contributes to it. But really the clincher, the one that really clinches it is the antibiotic intake. And the antibiotics are in the dairy and the meats. Especially young people like to eat cold cut sandwiches. Definitely the kiss of death. And the kids just get it into their mind that, hey, I've just got to kill myself. And that thinking is actually motivated by the antibiotics in the meat that they're eating.
Wow.
I mean, that's the short answer. Yeah.
Yeah. I wish there was more time. I'd ask you about the friend that's on dialysis, but I don't think he wants to get well, and maybe it's what he's eating. He won't give up the junk that's poisoning him either. You know,
well, if he doesn't want to get well, then he can't heal by natural healing, so that's not worthwhile. I have a show on suicide.
Kidneys, you really can't. Right.
Have your friend listen to the show on suicide. It talks all about the antibiotic connection and how suicide has been increasing exponentially, and it correlates with the putting antibiotics in the food supply.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, hi.
Hello, it's Dr. Daniels. Hi.
Hi. I have a question for you. I'm 21 years old, and I get, like, acne on my, like, chin and forehead and on my chest. I get, like, keloid scars. I was wondering, you know, any, like, thoughts on how to heal the acne and keloids?
Yeah, a lot of thoughts on that. Acne and keloids, actually, they're two different things. The keloid is kind of a more advanced problem with it. But it's basically the cure, if you want to call it that, is a change in your diet and aggressively cleaning your system out. And things like sauna will make it worse because with the sauna, it draws more toxins to the skin. And so if you already have acne, then you don't want to draw more toxins to the skin because you're concerned about your appearance. That's your basic motivation, right?
Right, yeah. And I noticed every time I, you know, go to the sauna, I could go up there for like 2 hours and I still get like acne on my chest. And it's like, oh, my God, like, does this aggravate it? You know, so I did notice that. But, like, well, what could I do to, you know, aggressively clean out my system?
I have a book called Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? And it's available at my website, vitalitycapsules.com. And basically, you pull out the junk from the inside, and then in the back section of the book is a section that tells you how to do a facial. You can do it at home with inexpensive ingredients, and it literally, you know, helps you rub the acne off your face.
So it's vitalitycapsules.com. And
right.
Is it on Amazon as well?
Called Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful?
Okay, got it. And also, I get, like, really gassy sometimes. Like, I don't know why. Like, I am wheat and dairy-free, but I don't know why. I get really, like, gassy and bloated. And like,
you might be constipated. You might be constipated.
Uh-huh. I do have a bowel movement every morning.
Yeah, I need about 3 a day to get rid of acne.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's more
I'm sorry. I did start taking apple cider vinegar like 3 times a day. I just started like, 2 days ago, and kind of somewhat getting better, but I don't know how to increase the bowel movement to 3 times a day.
You could try the Vitality Capsules at vitalitycapsules.com. That's what they do. They help clear out your intestines and your liver.
Oh, okay, I got it. And if I have any more questions, can I, like, shoot you an email?
Yep, you can just contact support@vitalitycapsules.com.
Right, and I did that, yeah. So you did get, okay, yes, yeah, so got it. Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, that's it for today's show, but I got to tell you my joke, comic strips. This guy comes home from work. He's wearing a suit and tie, and he's greeted by his wife. But the guy says, well, I just murdered another 10,000 people today. And his wife says, oh, honey, don't take it so hard. All you did was approve drugs. It's your job. So that's it for today. We'll see you again next week. And if murder were legal, would you do it? And shoot me your questions for next week's show, and we'll answer them on the air. Okay. Goodbye, and happy holidays. Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year.